but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
Back to the Bald-Faced Truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
We were talking about Oregon football in the Chip Kelly era and how special that all felt at the time. One guy who can talk a lot about that, who went on to bigger things in the NFL, three-time Super Bowl champion, guy who pops up on the Big Ten Network, is also popping up on a podcast with Jonathan Stewart, Kenyon Berner joining us now. How special did it feel when you were in college at Oregon, when you look back?
John, there is no better feeling than that. And I think now is the perfect time to be asked that question, because while you're in it, you don't really pay attention. You don't really have time to sit and acknowledge, you know, what it is and what you're feeling, what you're experiencing, all the things that you're going through. But man, that was one of the greatest times of all of our lives, you know, for those guys who were on those teams, and to be in that environment, to be in that setting, there's not too much that tops that feeling.
The offense that you ran, in Chip's offense, you went on in the NFL, you learned a lot of other football, you saw football played a number of different ways. What made that offense work at that time in that era?
It was something that no one was doing. You know, the tempo of that offense was absolutely insane. I can remember when Chip first took over, going into my redshirt freshman year, and what our practices were like going into that spring. The first couple of days, you wanted to throw up. You wanted to give everything you ate up, everything you had last night, the day before, it wanted to come up. And then it was absolutely insane. And that's how we were looking at Chip, like, what are you doing? Like, you're trying to kill us out here. Somebody's going to have a heart attack. But then you get comfortable in that system and you continue to get faster and faster and faster. Nobody was moving and getting plays in at the rate in which we were. I think there was a stat back, I can't remember the exact year, but we were getting plays off every 13 seconds.
Yeah.
Like, nobody's prepared for that. Yeah, I don't care how much you do in a week. That's not enough time to prepare for a team that's been doing it for year after year after year and getting comfortable in that system. So that's what separated us. It wasn't that we had more talent than the teams that we were playing. We didn't have more talent than SC. We didn't have more talent than Cal. We didn't have more talent than a lot of the teams that we played, but the tempo at which we moved, other teams couldn't sustain. You know, it caused teams to become very undisciplined.
When you would run like a third down play and then very quickly line up and run a fourth down play, were you guys calling two plays, or was it, hey, if you got into a fourth and one situation, there was just a one-word call, everybody knew the formation, everybody knew the play?
No, never a two-play call. It was, we get whatever yardage we get, and I mean, we knew Chip. He didn't have the nickname that he had at Oregon for nothing. They didn't call him Big Boss Chip for nothing. So we knew him. We knew on fourth down, it didn't really matter if we felt we could get it, if he felt we could get it, we were going. So if it was a short distance, we knew what it was going to be. We knew we were a running team. That's what everybody knew we were going to do. We were going to run the football. And then he would throw you guys off with a pass here and there, but we knew what we were going to do. It's just the confidence that he had it, but it was never a two-play call.
I look back at the national title game. I was just talking about the 2011 game, 22-19 with Auburn. You were right there in that game, and you know, the Michael Dyer play will haunt people, I think, forever. But do you ever look back and go, like, you were that close to winning a national championship at Oregon against an SEC team that had Cam Newton and had Nick Fairley and all those defensive tackles. That, you know, that was a normal SEC champion type team. And here was Oregon in this game. I mean, did it hit you at the time how close you guys were to breaking through, or did it sting, or what did that feel like?
It definitely stung. It's still a little bit to this day. It stings a little bit knowing how close you were. Never get another opportunity to win a college national championship as a player ever again. So it definitely stings. And it again, time has went by where you can actually sit back, look back, and reflect. And then we have some great teams, and that team was one of the best teams to come through Oregon. And so to be in that game against the Nick Fairleys, like you said, and the Cam Newtons, and to do to them what we were doing and hang, it was, mm-hmm. you know, it stings, and it hits me every now and then. Me and I'll probably be talking to Jonathan, or I'll be talking to Mike, or whoever, will talk about that game, and you know, it hurts to know how close we were. But again, the only time close counts is in horseshoes, so can't cry over spilled milk.
You go on, you win 3 Super Bowls. You got very different experiences in those games. What was that NFL experience like for you, and sort of the realization of, like, the professional world of football?
It was eye-opening. The NFL, and I tell everybody this, I tell older cats this, I tell young cats coming into the league, guys that are just getting going, if you don't know who you are and you don't have a solid foundation in who you are, the NFL will chew you up and spit you out. It's one of the most cutthroat industries that you'll ever come across. There's not another industry that is cutthroat as the NFL. The NFL doesn't care about you. It cares about you as long as you can do for it, but the minute they don't have a need for you, they're done with you. But the NFL made a man out of me. The NFL opened my eyes to a lot of things and forced me to grow and mature in ways that I probably would not have grown in had I not been thrown into the fire like I was being in the NFL, seeing how business was ran and how ruthless business can be. But then it also taught me to understand business and understand the opposite side of it, to think like a businessman. So when I am running a company, I can't allow emotions to affect how I run. I'm looking to always consistently make my company better. You know, there's loyalty, but at the same time, you got to do what's right for you and yours. So, being in the NFL was an absolute blessing. And there's again, lessons that I learned at such an early age and at such a fast rate, I don't think life would have given me that until later on in life.
When I look back, you know, you're drafted by Carolina and you come into the league. Does it, you know, do you look for a mentor? Do you find a mentor? Or do those mentors generally look at you and go, I'm not helping you, Rook, because you're here to take my job, but you have Jonathan Stewart in Carolina when you're drafted. Does that help you?
Absolutely, 1,000%. And my story and my path is not everybody's. You know, I tell people all the time, like, my path was completely different, and I was very fortunate to where I've always been a person that I sit, I watch, I listen. I'm very observant. I understand where I fit into the room. I understand how to sit back and let the room breathe. Mm-hmm. And because I was that way, all of the older vets, they all took to me. So it wasn't just Jonathan. It was D'Angelo Williams. It was Mike Tolbert. It was Steve Smith. It was Jordan Gross. It was Thomas Davis. It was Luke Kuechly. When I left there, it was Darren Sproles. It was Brandon Graham, Malcolm Jenkins. The list goes on and on and on of guys who were way older than me, and really, they didn't have to help, but they chose to. And I was very fortunate because they made the transition and they taught me how to be a pro. They made that transition seamless, but they made it a hell of a lot easier than what it was for a lot of my other teammates who older guys didn't take to. That mm-hmm. It was hard for them to go ask questions. It was hard to get a straight answer. You know, again, the guys that took me up under their wing, it wasn't just about football, but it was about making young Kenyon a better man.
That was you, though. You walk into that room, and you had that at Oregon, too, because, you know, I know I walked away from interviewing you as a young player, and I thought, man, what a great kid. You didn't walk into that locker room in the NFL acting like you owned the place or the league owed you something. You walked in, as you said, observant and willing to listen. And I think those older guys took to you because they said, hey, this kid's here to listen and he's here to be taught. And they had some expertise for you.
Yeah, they did. I mean, and you hit the nail right on the head. I've never walked into any room. I don't care how experienced I am in the room. I may have the most experience in the room, but I'm going to walk in with a beginner's mentality that where I can learn and I'm open to listen to anybody and everybody. And that has not only helped me in football, but in everyday task in my life, every day.
Chip Kelly, you know, he loved culture keepers. He talked about the guys he had to have. And he gets to the NFL, the Eagles, you know, trade for you. Why didn't Chip's style work that first time in Philadelphia?
Chip had the wrong people in place. Chip trusted people that he shouldn't have trusted. He had guys as captains on the team who were not fans of him, and you could call them cancers in the locker room when you're trying to move the team in one direction, but you have guys in the locker room talking and discussing things in another direction, and when you have guys going upstairs talking to the ownership, saying different things about you, you know, it's not going to work out. And with Chip didn't adjust to operating with grown men. You know, he came from college where you're dealing with kids, you're dealing with 18, 19-year-old kids. When you get to the NFL level, you're dealing with 36, 37, 38-year-olds who are married with kids, guys that are making millions and millions and millions of dollars. And at the NFL level, there's certain players that you just have to learn to deal with. There's certain things that, you know, you kind of got to kiss butt at that level to a certain extent. I've seen it with a lot of coaches. But Chip wasn't that guy. Chip wasn't going to kiss your butt. You were going to come in. You were going to work hard. And certain guys were used to being treated a certain way and being shown some favoritism in some way, and Chip wasn't going to do that. And it just didn't work out. When you have the wrong people, when you put trust in the hands of wrong people, oftentimes it don't go well for you.
Kenyon Barner with us, former Oregon Duck, great three-time Super Bowl champion. You can catch him. He'll pop up on the Big Ten Network. I love that when, you know, you'll show up at a big Big Ten game, Big Ten title game last year, or part of Media Day. What do you make of Oregon's 13-1 last year? And, you know, the way the season ended, nobody loved it. But, you know, what do you make of Dan Lanning's third season?
It was absolutely beautiful. You got to go back prior to us getting into the conference, even the conversation about us going into the conference and the ruckus that caused with the Big Ten and everybody else. And then once we announced and it was there and how we, you know, the media that we would put out the videos and floating the duck up the river at Media Day, you know, doing all of that and then coming out and running, absolutely running through the Big Ten the way that we did outside of the Ohio State game, the one-point game that we had, that said something. You know, the noise that we talked prior to a game of football being played, we stood on it, and we backed everything up that we said all the way up into the Rose Bowl. But that was, again, the inaugural season in the Big Ten Conference, and you go in and do what you do, go and do what they did, and the fashion in which they did to go undefeated in conference play. I mean, what more can you say about that? It was an absolute spectacular season with an absolute nightmare of an ending.
Right.
An absolute nightmare of an ending. But, you know, sometimes that's a game of football. That's how the cookie crumbles sometimes. And it was unfortunate to go out the way that we did. But, again, at the end of the day, we all know what the end result of the playoff was. Now, nobody was beating that Ohio State team. And I blame Michigan for birthing that baby. I think everybody in the country should be mad at Michigan.
Yeah.
Because the team that Ohio State became after that Michigan game, there wasn't a team in the country that would have been able to stand in front of them, whether in the playoff or out of the playoff, and have a shot. That was a completely different team with a completely different level of motivation that no one in the country could have matched.
I am eager to see how they build on this. Dante Moore at quarterback. What are your expectations of the offense this year?
I have high expectations, but I think it's going to start slow. There's a lot of inexperience throughout the entire offense, from quarterback to the offensive line. You have individual guys who have all the experience in the world, but collectively playing together, this is a new group. You know, so all they have is spring ball and all they have is fall camp. So you're trying to find your rhythm, you're trying to find your cadence, you're trying to find your routines. Then at the receiver position with the loss of Evan Stewart, that was an absolute enormous blow. So now your expectations of guys become far greater than what they would have been have had if the offense had them in place. I think this offense leans heavily on the run game at the beginning of the season. And luckily for this team, we don't truly play anybody that is going to force us to pass the ball. I think, though, every game that we play up until that Penn State game is a game that we can continue to run the ball and either manage the game, come back into the game, or win the game with just the run in itself. But with that being said, Dante Moore is one of the most talented quarterbacks I've ever seen in my life throw a football. His ability to change his arm angles, his ability to get the ball downfield, his ability to process. The kid is special, and I told him this a while back, and I'll say it here again. If Dante's mental was ever to catch up to his physical, he would be a dangerous player. And I think that is what the test will be to see when these bullets start flying live. Has your mental, has your ability to sit back in the pocket before the play snap, get your pre-snap reads, read a defense, get the ball to your receivers effectively, run the offense, be the leader. If he has caught up mentally, this team is going to be in great hands.
Kenyon, before I let you go here, you know that you were talking about a team that could not be stopped. In 2012, you rushed for 321 yards and 5 touchdowns at USC. That had to feel good in front of a lot of people you grew up with and people you knew and a familiar opponent. And when you're having a day like that and everything's just clicking that way, what is that like?
It's that zone that everybody talks about. It doesn't matter what sport you're in. Every athlete talks about a zone. In basketball, they talk about getting in a zone where the rim is big as the ocean. In football, you get in a zone to where you feel like there's nothing. It doesn't matter what the defense does. It doesn't matter if they have the perfect call, if they have the perfect play drawn up and call it. There's nothing that they can do. That was one of those games to where, as the game went on, I just felt like within it. Before I even talk about me, we got to talk about the offensive line and my receivers. That was the best blocked game that I've ever played in, from junior All-American, high school, college. I've never had a game where receivers and an offensive line blocked the way that they did. There was a lot of times where I didn't get touched till I was 10, 15 yards down the field. So without those guys, that game doesn't happen. But then after that, as that game went on, it just felt like there was nothing that SC could do with me. I felt I was going to have my way, and that's what that game turned into. It turned into a game where when I got that ball in my hands, there was a lot of times I'm begging Marcus, don't pull it, just give it to me. I'm like, just give it, don't pull it. And there was a couple of times where he tried to pull it, I took it from him. but that again, that was just the kind of day it was. You know, I was the guy that day. To where, you know, everything just went right. That was one of the perfect storm, as they say. We went out there and got it done.
You got friends who are playing on USC's team that day. Is there chatter going on during that game, or
absolutely, absolutely. It was a lot of chatter.
Is there any chatter in the lead up to the game? Are you texting those guys? Are you talking with them?
No, before the game, I'm not saying anything. So all the chatter happened between at the end of the 2011 season going into that 2012 season when I went home. That's when all of the trash talking took place. I went home after they had beat us up in Austin, and I went to one of my friends' parties, and a bunch of the SC guys were there, and they were talking about what they had did and what they were going to do, this, that, and the other. And then I think pregame, it may have been a little bit, but not too much. But all that came to a sudden halt as that game got rolling.
Well, you got the last word. 321 yards, 5 touchdowns. Kenyon Barner, hey, thank you, man. Where can we expect to see you this college football season?
Still with the Big Ten Network, so I'll be popping up here and there with them. Definitely, I'll be catching up, obviously, on the podcast with Ducks of a Feather, myself and Jonathan Stewart. Catch us on there, but I'll definitely be in Eugene a couple of times this season, and definitely look for me on the Big Ten Network when those opportunities come about.
Kenyon, I'll see you in the press box, man. Thank you. Good catching up.
Appreciate you, my guy.
All right. There he goes. Kenyon Barner, former Oregon Duck. I love that. He's the trash talking before, the summer before, and then as the game is unfolding. And interesting insight, too, on Chip Kelly's lack of success in Philadelphia. You know, as he's trying to coach grown men, and you've got people in your own locker room just killing you with others, your team captain's killing you. It's Chip talked about the culture keepers. Those are the players you have to have that help perpetuate your culture from one season to the next, one game to the next. He didn't have those guys in the NFL locker room. And also, he's trying to control the sleep style, you know, and what you eat. And suddenly you've got a locker room of guys who are going, you know, DeSean Jackson and others saying, you know, don't, you're not here to tell me what to eat. You're not here to tell me what my diet's supposed to be. LeSean McCoy, another one. And I think he just didn't have control of the locker room the same way he had control of the players at Oregon. And even today, I don't know if you could talk to and control a college locker room the way Chip Kelly did in college, because so much has changed, right? It's more it's more of a professional game, so to speak, and you're dealing with professional athletes. You got the bald-faced truth. I have parting thoughts. Leave it here.